Hey, good morning, everybody. Welcome to the last class of 241, Human Physiology. Today is December 8th, and we're going to just talk a little bit about reproductive system today, which you know is what? Otherwise known as the? What kind of system? What does it produce, really? Not just the same thing over and over and over again. It produces something new and unique. Yeah, a new and unique individual. So it's a diversification system as well as reproductive system. And probably diversification is even more important. All right, so looking at the schedule, today is the 8th, covering chapter 20. And then next time, Thursday. Wow, this Thursday, right? This Thursday, the 10th, exam number 4 on chapters 14, 16, 17, and 20. Anybody have a question on what chapters are on the last test? 14, 16, 17, and 20. So not 21, not 24, not 18, just these right here. All right? And you have the study guide for those. So not everything that was covered in Blackboard is going to be covered on this test. Only stuff that I lecture on. All right, so that's good. So what do you need for next time? Picture ID, right? Scantron, make sure it's a nice clean Scantron, because I probably won't see you again if you turn in one that's all messed up and I can't run it through the Scantron reader. I don't know what we're going to do. Okay, then I have to give you an incomplete or something. So make sure it's a nice clean Scantron, pencil, good eraser, and a picture ID. And then you're good to go, right, with that. Any question on what you need to bring to the exam? No. Okay, fantastic. All right, well, let's talk a little bit about the reproductive system then. We'll talk just quickly with male. And in particular, what I'm interested in is endocrine control of the male reproductive system. All right, so does anybody have any questions?
Yeah.
Questions? Yeah, good.
Do you need a calculator?
I don't believe we do, but I'll have to double check and make sure. I didn't have time to check the test, but I don't think you need a calculator, like to do filtration pressure, things like that. All right. Okay, maybe I clicked the wrong button. I clicked the right button. Where'd it go? Okay. All right, so the sign-in sheet is going around someplace. Okay, male reproductive system. What's the primary reproductive structure in the male? Anybody know? Take a guess. I heard testes. I like that, testes. What's the job of the testes? It's twofold. It makes sex cells, which we call gametes, and those gametes are called sperm. And the second function is to produce sex steroids like testosterone. There's only one sex steroid in male. All right, so how is all this controlled? All right, so there are two compartments within the testes. There are tubules, and the tubules are responsible for spermatogenesis. And then there are cells that are interlaced between the seminiferous tubules, and we're going to call these the interstitial cells or the cells of Leydig. And the seminiferous tubules is where spermatogenesis takes place. There's another kind of cell inside the seminiferous tubule. It's called a Sertoli cell. And spermatogenesis, or the spermatids as they're maturing, actually mature within a Sertoli cell. And the Sertoli cell provides nutrients and supports spermatogenesis. And Sertoli cells don't secrete any kind of steroids. It's the job of the interstitial cells, the Leydig cells, to secrete testosterone. And then these Sertoli cells are dependent on testosterone. Testosterone then supports spermatogenesis and the Sertoli cells. And testosterone also then produces secondary male sex characteristics, like increased muscle mass, more coarse hair all over the body, increased larynx. So male voices typically are a little bit deeper. Right, and so those are some of the effects of androgens or testosterone. So here is the testes. You know the anatomy of the testes, I'm sure. If we do a cross-section through a seminiferous tubule, we can see spermatozoa lining the interior lumen of a seminiferous tubule. Then here is another seminiferous tubule and another one, and there are a few cells that are outside the tubules. These are the interstitial cells. So these are the interstitial cells that produce and release testosterone. There are two important hormones from the anterior pituitary that support these processes. They're called gonadotropins, and the gonadotropins are LH and FSH. And LH is responsible for stimulating the interstitial cells, or the cells of Leydig, to secrete testosterone. FSH is important because it helps spermatogenesis. It promotes spermatogenesis, and of course that's inside the seminiferous tubule. So there's two different locations, two different hormones, and female has LH and FSH as well. They have similar kinds of effects in the female. So here is the control system, right? Then here is the hypothalamus, and the hypothalamus is going to control the anterior pituitary. And you should know how the hypothalamus controls the anterior pituitary. It is through what kind of anatomical structure? As opposed to the posterior pituitary. How does the hypothalamus exert control over the anterior pituitary? By secreting, releasing hormones into a capillary bed that's in the hypothalamus, and then it goes through the hypothalamo-hypophyseal portal blood vessel. It's a portal blood vessel to a second capillary in the anterior pituitary. The hormone leaves, and it causes the cells of the anterior pituitary to release some other hormones, and those hormones are follicle-stimulating hormone and luteinizing hormone. FSH and LH are what we call gonadotropins because they go to the gonad and they maintain the size and function of a gonad. And in this particular case, we're talking about a testes. So the compound, the hormone that's released by the hypothalamic is called gonadotropin-releasing hormone, GnRH, or you could call it gonadotropin-releasing factor. Either one would work for me. All right, so that GnRH is like a neural hormone that goes into the portal blood system, causes the anterior pituitary to release FSH and LH. Right. FSH and LH have different target tissues. And even though it's the testes, right, FSH goes to the seminiferous tubules and supports spermatogenesis, which is when a germ cell divides via meiosis into gametes. Right. That happens within the seminiferous tubule. But LH receptors are contained in the interstitial cells, or Leydig cells. And when LH binds to these interstitial cell receptors, they produce testosterone. So there are two primary effects of the testes. One is to produce sperm, and the other is to synthesize and release testosterone. Right, and this is controlled by negative feedback loop. Primarily, when the interstitial cells release testosterone, it feeds back a short loop to the anterior pituitary and also a long loop back to the hypothalamus, both exerting negative feedback. So as testosterone levels increase, what happens to the levels of GnRH? They start to decrease, right? And that's why we see this nice negative feedback. And as testosterone levels, what happens to secretion of FSH and LH? And again, it decreases as well. All right, so, and where does FSH and LH come from? From pituitary or hypothalamus or testes? From the pituitary gland, right? So FSH and LH from the anterior pituitary gland. And these are what we call gonadotropins, right? Without FSH and LH, then the gonads are going to regress. And they're going to stop producing sperm. They're going to stop producing testosterone. All right, so this is a really nice negative feedback mechanism to have in your mind because some people use anabolic steroids to build muscle mass. Probably Arnold Schwarzenegger might be one of them. I don't know for sure. I haven't talked to him exactly about that, right? But many weightlifters do, people that are interested in building muscle mass, right? They'll inject themselves with an anabolic steroid so their blood testosterone levels increase, what is going to be the effect on the rest of their reproductive system if testosterone increases? What about on the hypothalamus? Increasing levels of testosterone will reduce GnRH, right? And that's going to cause the anterior pituitary to stop secreting FSH and LH. There's also negative feedback, the short loop to the anterior pituitary, increasing levels of testosterone. That's going to reduce FSH and LH. And what are these? What are FSH and LH? These are gonadotropins, right? They're gonadotropins. So as FSH and LH decline, what happens to the testes? They decline as well. right? So they'll shrivel up, they'll stop producing sperm, stop releasing testosterone, but that makes sense because somebody is administering a lot of testosterone to themselves already, right? So that's how that mechanism takes place. But the gonads will regress when that happens. I don't know how small they get, but maybe like a raisin. I'm not sure, okay? So it's interesting. Some people with these huge muscle mass have incredibly small gonads. It's just the way it goes, and I don't know if the trade-off is worth it. Okay. All right, so use this nice negative feedback chart right here to appreciate that. Okay, so I think that's all I'm going to say about the male reproductive system. So the remainder of the time, I'm going to talk about female reproductive control, okay, which is scooting ahead right over here. Ah, nice. Right in through here someplace. Okay, I'm going to talk about two cycles. Your book calls one the ovarian cycle and the other one it causes the menstrual cycle. And I want you to change the name of menstrual cycle to uterine cycle. That makes more sense to me, right? Because the ovary is a structure, the uterus is a structure, and I think this will make more sense to you as well. So FSH and LH are important for both the ovarian cycle and uterine cycle. The graph that I'm going to spend a lot of time on is this one right here. All right, so this is a really nice graph. Probably if you were to draw this out, that would be really nice. So we see a bunch of graphs versus time. These are days of the, either ovarian cycle or uterine cycle. They're going to be superimposed on each other. And we're going to see some events that happen within the ovary on this second line. The first line are anterior pituitary hormone levels, right? The third line are ovarian hormone levels. And then the fourth line right here is just representation of what's happening within the endometrium of the uterus during the uterine cycle. So this menstrual cycle right here, probably you should just cross off and put uterine cycle. That would be fine with me. Let's talk about these first two graphs up over here. And the ovarian, ovarian events, all right? So what we're looking at is the development of a follicle. And a follicle contains an oocyte, which is a female gamete, and it's surrounded by a bunch of granular cells. And as this follicle develops, there's an area on the inside that we call an antrum filled with fluid that develops. And then finally we get a mature follicle. And this oocyte then can be ejected from this mature follicle. And we'll see what happens to that in just a little bit. So the hormone that causes maturation of a follicle from a primordial follicle to a mature follicle right here is follicle stimulating hormone. That's the primary hormone that causes maturation of a follicle. And where does FSH come from? Anterior pituitary, right? That's a gonadotropin, and of course this follicle is in an ovary. And so that ovary is a gonad. This oocyte right here is a gamete, right? And the first day of the ovarian cycle and uterine cycle is right here. It's not shown very well on the left-hand side. Let's go all the way to the right-hand side. This number one corresponds to this tick mark right here. That's day number one, and day number one is signified by the beginning of menses, right, which is a period of mild hemorrhage where the endometrium is lost from the uterus. So that's day number one. And if you look over here on the left side, it looks like day number one is right in the middle of menses, and that's not really what's happening. Right? So day number one is the beginning of menstruation. All right, and we know that the cycle is 28 days long. Right smack in the middle is day 14. And right on day 14, there are some interesting hormonal effects and that there is a large surge in luteinizing hormone, a smaller surge in FSH, but it is this large surge in LH in the female that causes ovulation. So if I ask you what causes follicle maturation, you're going to say increasing levels of FSH. Right? And if I say what causes ovulation, you're going to say then there is a surge in luteinizing hormone. All right. So the follicle then becomes, right, it just doesn't regress immediately after ovulation. It becomes another very important endocrine structure. And this thing is what we call the corpus luteum. Corpus luteum. All right, so if we look at the ovarian cycle, we can break it up into a number of different phases. The first phase, when the follicle is developing, we're going to call that the follicular phase. That's under the control of FSH. Then we have a day where ovulation takes place. That's a phase all by itself. That's under the control of LH. Right. And then, all right, we have the luteal phase. And during the luteal phase, the follicle has disappeared, but it's been replaced by another really important endocrine gland. All right, so let's see. The follicle right here from the ovary, what's the function of an ovary once again? It has two functions. Function of an ovary is produce eggs and what else? Release hormones, right? Like estrogen and progesterone. So a female has two, male only has one. And as the follicle grows and develops, right, this follicle is proliferating, and what it is doing is also secreting estrogen. So if we look down over here at the uterine cycle, we see that plasma levels of estrogen increase. That corresponds to or correlates to an increase in the size of a follicle as it's maturing. So a follicle secretes estrogen. Right? At ovulation, the follicle disappears and it's replaced with a corpus luteum. It's the exact same cells, but they change their activity. So after ovulation, then estrogen levels start to decrease because the follicle has disappeared. It has become the corpus luteum, and it's the job of the corpus luteum then to start to secrete progesterone. Right? So corpus luteum secretes progesterone. If implantation does not take place, or fertilization does not happen and implantation does not take place, then the corpus luteum will regress, and as it regresses, what happens to progesterone? It starts to go down. Okay, so a developing follicle produces estrogen primarily, and a corpus luteum pretty much just secretes progesterone, a little bit of estrogen. All right, and so why does this corpus luteum, how did this corpus luteum come to be to secrete all this progesterone? It's the result of an LH surge that produces the corpus luteum. Okay. And so we see what causes this decline in estrogen when the follicle gets replaced with the corpus luteum. And as the corpus luteum starts to degenerate toward the end of the cycle, what happens to progesterone and estrogen? They both decline. Okay. Well, one of the things that we haven't talked about yet are what are the effects of estrogen and progesterone from the ovary on the uterus. And you probably know a couple layers of the uterus, like the perimetrium on the outside, fibrous capsule, myometrium on the in the middle, right? And then the lining up against the lumen of the uterus, that is the endometrium. Endometrium has a couple of different layers. The one that we're looking right here is called the functional layer. The functional layer can grow depending on what the level of these estrogen and progesterone levels are. We call that growth proliferation, right? When you have one cell and then it grows into two and then four, that's proliferation via mitosis, right? And so estrogens, increasing levels of estrogen increase proliferation of the functional layer of the endometrium. And then after ovulation, when progesterone levels start to increase, right, proliferation increases, but it also causes the maturation of glands in the endometrium, which support implantation. And it also then, progesterone then also causes the development of a vascular system within the endometrium, a highly vascular, vascularized endometrium. Right. If progesterone starts to decrease, then the vascular system degenerates. Maybe I can see that beginning to happen on this particular figure. I can see degeneration of the vascular tissue, which means then that these glands don't have support. You cut off blood supply to these glands, they stop to function. And as these cells don't get nutrients and blood, then the cells of the endometrium start to die as well, right? And then they're removed from the body when these remnants of that vascular system start to bleed or hemorrhage, right? And then these cells are left. Or leave the uterus. All right, so what you see right here, progesterone is a contraction of a term that it used to be called progestational hormone. What the heck is gestation? That's a period of time when somebody is pregnant, right? Progestational hormone. So when somebody is pregnant, then the endometrium, right, is very mature. It has glands that are functioning, a very good vascular system. And so progesterone is always going to be at a high level, right, before implantation or after implantation if it does occur, if fertilization and implantation takes place. All right, so when you look at this slide right here, I see regression of the corpus luteum and then regression of the endometrium. In this particular case, has fertilization and implantation taken place when I look at this slide? Fertilization and implantation. Okay, because what's happening to the endometrium? It is, yeah, it's regressing. All right, so implantation has not happened. So this is just like a normal everyday cycle. And if implantation does take place, right, then the endometrium is maintained, right, and probably even grows a little bit more. What's the hormone that's necessary to maintain the endometrium? It is progesterone. Where does progesterone come from? The corpus luteum, but in these circumstances that we see on this particular slide, the corpus luteum is regressing. If implantation does take place, the corpus luteum does not regress. It stays nice and healthy, probably for about 3 months, until the placenta is big enough to secrete its own progesterone and estrogen. And so there is communication between the growing embryo, right, and the corpus luteum. The growing embryo has to tell the corpus luteum to not regress, to maintain itself so that it secretes progesterone so that implanted embryo, right, has a place to stay and mature. So there is another hormone that's not on this graph, and you might want to just maybe draw an arrow, just loop an arrow back up over here. Right? If implantation does take place, the placenta secretes a compound that is what's measured in a home pregnancy test, and it's called human chorionic gonadotropin, otherwise known as HCG. Little H, capital C, capital G. And without that HCG signal, the corpus luteum will regress, the endometrium will be lost, right? But with implantation, HCG maintains the corpus luteum, which then keeps secreting progesterone, which maintains, right, the function of this functional layer of the endometrium. All right, so that's some important control of the endocrine system, and I talked about it really fast. I can't imagine I talked about it so fast. All right, so I don't know, ask me some questions, or I'll maybe try to fill in some points that I skipped over. I have two graphs right here. One is the ovarian cycle, events that are happening in an ovary, and then the bottom graphs right here are the events that are happening within the uterus, right? So you might want to call this the uterine cycle. Oh, I forgot some things. Okay, I see some things that I forgot. For the ovarian cycle, we can break it up into three phases. The first phase, when a follicle is developing, we call that the follicular phase. What hormone supports follicular development in an ovary? FSH, where does that come from? Anterior pituitary, right? What causes ovulation? A surge in luteinizing hormone. That's right. And then both of these hormone levels start to regress. And what happens to that mature follicle after ovulation? Does it disappear completely? No. It becomes the corpus luteum. All right. So we have a couple different structures right here. We have a follicle during the follicular phase. And after ovulation, we have the luteal phase because here is the corpus luteum. And the corpus, the follicles, what is the primary hormone that's secreted by a follicle? It is estrogen. What's the primary hormone secreted by the corpus luteum? It is progesterone, right? All right, so these hormones from the ovary go to the uterus. That's the target tissue for, in, at least in this particular illustration, for estrogen and progesterone. Increasing levels of estrogen cause proliferation of the endometrium, right? And then progesterone causes the final maturation steps and activation of the glandular tissue of the endometrium, final maturation of the vascular system of the endometrium. And so the phases of the uterine cycle, the first one right here, actually, we'll get to the first one. The second one is the proliferative phase, because that's when the endometrium starts to proliferate. The third phase is the secretory phase, when the glands mature and develop, and the vascular system is developed. And then the first phase is menstruation. Right, so the menstruation is really the first phase, followed by proliferation, secretory, then followed by the menstrual phase once again. All right, so there are three phases for the ovarian cycle. How many phases are there for the uterine cycle? There are three. Right. How many gonadotropins are involved? Two. What are the names of the gonadotropins? FSH and LH. What's the job of FSH? Follicle maturation, right? And then LH is for ovulation. What about estrogen? What's the job of estrogen from this follicle? Causes proliferation of the endometrium, causes proliferation in other parts of the body as well, like glandular tissue of the breast. And then after ovulation, the corpus luteum secretes progesterone. And what's the job of progesterone? It maintains the endometrium and causes these glands to mature and start to function. And also, it puts the final maturation steps on the vascular system of the endometrium. Right, so during this cycle, what happens to the endometrium? What do we see happening right here? It is growing and then regressing, growing and then regressing. So that's because these endometrial cells have these estrogen and progesterone receptors, and then once a month they're lost from the body. Right, so normally with hemorrhage, they would leave the uterus through the cervical canal out vagina, but every once in a while for some women, okay, don't maybe exactly know why, but some of these endometrial cells, when they start to slough off, they don't go in that direction, but they can actually go retrograde through the fallopian tube, out the end of the fallopian tube into the pelvic cavity or abdominal cavity. Remember, there's nothing separating abdominal cavity from pelvic cavity. And there they can implant into mesenteries or some other vascular supply, and they can be viable there. So that during the cycle right here, they start to proliferate and then regress. Right? So they proliferate during the proliferative phase of the uterine cycle, and when they proliferate in the abdominal cavity or pelvic cavity, that causes severe inflammation and irritation. Right? And it's just growth. It's a growth process. Right? They act like little tumors growing all over the place. What do we call that process when that happens? It's a pathological process. Shouldn't happen. That's called endometriosis, when endometrial cells end up in the pelvic cavity or abdominal cavity instead of being lost from the body during the cycle. Fortunately, that's not cancer because they can't migrate to a different tissue. They can't invade brain or bone or muscle or liver or anything like that. They're pretty much trapped within the cavities, but nonetheless, they produce severe irritation when that happens. All right, and then endometriosis subsides to a great degree, right, after menopause, if somebody can wait that long for that to happen. Sometimes those endometrial cells have to be removed as best as can by a surgical procedure if the endometriosis is so severe. Okay. All right, so this slide is pretty important to answer a bunch of questions on the test. So in the male, what does LH do in the male? LH. Look at your notes. What are the target cells for LH in the male? They're the interstitial cells, right? And there are LH receptors on the cells of Leydig or interstitial cells, and that results in the release of testosterone. Okay. What cells have FSH receptors? Those would be the germ cells or stem cells within the seminiferous tubules that are responsible for producing spermatocytes. And then Sertoli cells need testosterone and FSH to support spermatogenesis as well. All right, so that's the male. LH for testosterone secretion, FSH for spermatogenesis. And in the female, what is FSH important for? Follicle maturation, okay, and LH is important for ovulation. Yeah, so those are the two important ones. All right, and then in the female, you should know where estrogen comes from. Where does estrogen primarily come from? a follicle, right? And as a follicle gets bigger and bigger and bigger, then it secretes more and more estrogen. And what's responsible for secreting progesterone is the corpus luteum, primarily corpus luteum. All right, so what's the job of increasing levels of estrogen on the uterus? Because the uterus is a target tissue for estrogen. It is. Causes proliferation of the endometrium. Right? And what's the job of progesterone? Maintains the endometrium, and it causes the final maturation of glandular tissues and the vascular system within the endometrium. And then what happens when progesterone starts to decrease when the corpus luteum regresses? Then the endometrium degenerates, right, and then is flushed from the body with that period of mild hemorrhage from these leaky blood vessels that are left over. What causes, after implantation, what causes the maintenance of the endometrium? What causes it to persist instead of degenerating? HCG from the placenta goes back to the corpus luteum, right? And there are HCG receptors on the corpus luteum, and then the corpus luteum maintains itself. It does not regress, and the corpus luteum secretes progesterone, and hence the functional layer of the endometrium does not regress if the corpus luteum keeps secreting progesterone. Okay, so the three phases of the ovarian cycle: follicular phase, when the follicle develops, ovulation, and then the luteal phase. What hormone is secreted during the luteal phase of the ovarian cycle? It is going to be progesterone, right? Because the corpus luteum secretes progesterone. What's the hormone during the follicular phase that's in control? Is estrogen, right? Okay, and estrogen promotes what? Proliferation, and progesterone supports the final maturation of the endometrium for implantation. Okay. And too bad I didn't talk about that yesterday, but I thought that was maybe a little bit fast to talk about that yesterday. And that's all I have planned for today. Is this chart right here. Okay. Yeah, so just look at your study guide. There's some end of chapter questions. Okay. Maybe some online questions. And this figure right here. Something about FSH. When is FSH being produced?
Yeah.
Okay, so estrogen is produced by this maturing follicle.
Right.
Okay. Well, FSH is produced
from the anterior
pituitary because of feedback from these sex steroids on the hypothalamus. So what causes the release of FSH and LH are levels of, or actually changing levels of estrogen and progesterone. So estrogen and progesterone will feed back to the hypothalamus, but it's not just a level, it's a change in level. Okay. Okay, so sign-in sheet is going around. Does anybody have another question on this particular figure right here? Yeah.
So HCG
is
about similar to that, is what stimulates progesterone.
Yes.
So it's not like they have similar.
HCG works through progesterone. So HCG doesn't directly maintain the endometrium. It just maintains the corpus luteum.
And what's
the placenta. The placenta. And so HCG is kind of similar to LH. It's kind of similar to LH.
And then you sent me a question now. The afternoon and progesterone are kind of like the negative feedback. They're different
on the left. There are long loops and short loops to the hypothalamus and the anterior pituitary. There's one strange thing. Okay, and I should have mentioned this. All right, let's look at levels of LH during the follicular phase. Kind of constant, and then all of a sudden start to increase, and then very rapidly increase. What does that correspond to in terms of the ovarian hormones, right? Because LH is an anterior pituitary hormone. What does that correlate with? Increasing levels of estrogen. Okay, so there's something special that happens in the hypothalamus. When there's increasing levels, right, this is before ovulation, when there are increasing levels of estrogen, that causes increasing levels of LH as well as FSH, which then causes an increase in estrogen, which causes an increase in FSH and LH, which causes an increase in estrogen, which causes a further increase in FSH and LH. What kind of feedback mechanism does that sound like? That's a positive feedback mechanism, right? So positive feedback mechanisms can't happen forever and ever because the whole universe would be filled up with LH and estrogen, and it is not. So what usually happens to a positive feedback mechanism, even if it's a nice normal one like we see right here? Something drastic has to change, right? And what changes is this follicle turns into a completely different structure, right? So ovulation happens. That's a pretty radical event. So the follicle is replaced completely with the corpus luteum, and that's what disturbs that positive feedback mechanism. Okay? Just like during parturition, there's a positive feedback mechanism between stress hormones that the fetus is producing and oxytocin release, maternal oxytocin. Oxytocin is a smooth muscle stimulant, so that causes the uterus to contract, which produces more stress on the infant, which produces more stress hormones, which produces more oxytocin release, which produces more stress hormones, which produces more oxytocin release. So that's a positive feedback mechanism as well between oxytocin and stress hormones from the fetus. But how come the whole universe isn't filled up with oxytocin? Because there's something drastic that happens, and that is parturition. Yeah, right? Okay. So this is just another example of a really nice, normal, positive feedback mechanism that just exists for a relatively short period of time. But sort is your question, answer to your question. Okay. Okay. That's all I have to say. What about the study guide? Yeah, study guide. Study guide, study guide. Unless you want to review something, what would you like to review? Okay, so on Thursday, I'll try to get here as soon as possible. Maybe the astronomy class will be done early, like they were today. And I hope so. And then you'll have some extra time.